though my art feet are still firmly on the ground. Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good morning, indeed. We're absolutely delighted to be here to present our results. We're especially appreciative of you spending the time to come and listen to our story, to come and listen to the business that we're building and the opportunities that we have in front of us. And I'm joined here today with Adrian, our CFO, Gareth, our chairman as well. Welcome, Gareth. And the agenda of today is I'll take you through the highlights of the 12 months to the end of April. Adrian will take you through all the financial results. Then afterwards, we'll have a chance to discuss the background to the results and how we see the future. And then, of course, we have plenty of opportunity for questions.
The arrow on the keyboard will work.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
It's the only thing with Dear Smith that hasn't worked.
There you go.
Right, apologies for that. Strong set of results. As I said, continuing the growth, and that's a strong set despite the obvious FX headwinds. The most important thing behind the results is about how we continue to build the quality of the business, building sustainability into our results. That sustainability and way of working that all of our stakeholders can start to rely on. And when you build it for all stakeholders, then you can build a long-term return for shareholders. So our key stakeholders, firstly, with our customers, how do we really delight them consistently in every part of the world where we're operating for them? How do we ensure that we can partner with them successfully? Growing share, growing service, a growing relationship with our customer. And with our people, how can we grow with our people, everybody who works in DS Smith? So we've built a high quality business. But we've also started to, again, reshape our business portfolio. We've come a long way over the last few years. And in the last year, and indeed as announced this morning, we've had a further expansion of our footprint, as well as disposing of some non-core assets. And with this momentum that's building, we've increased the margin target that we set out a few years ago by 100 basis points, looking for a top end of around 10%. So just turning to the detail of last year, we've seen a volume growth, 3.1%. We'll talk more about that later. Clearly well ahead of the market, let alone GDP. All regions are in growth. A return on sales at 8.8% has risen by 130 basis points compared to last year. And as I've said, there's 100 basis point improvement in our medium-term target. The return on capital employed now to 14.6%, 160 basis point improvement. At constant exchange rates, our free cash flow up 146%, that's driven the debt lower. So our gearing now, we have net debt to EBITDA of 1.5 times. And at constant currency, our earnings per share have risen by 24%. At actual currency, 14%, which has enabled another strong improvement in the dividend. Those are the highlights, and Adrian will take you through the more of the detail.
Which one moved it in the end? Is it the...
It's the down button.
The down button.
Yeah.
Very good. Complicated. All right, thank you, Miles, and good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to be presenting our four-year results today. By any measure, these are a good set of results, and even more so when you consider that they've been delivered against a backdrop of the systematic weakening of the euro and the spectre of deflation becoming a reality in a few of our markets. These challenges have been met head-on, and the strength of our business model has demonstrated our resilience. In order to sensibly explain our results, I will, as usual, be talking about the constant currency changes as I go through the presentation. You're all familiar with our five financial key performance indicators, which are our medium-term targets. I'm pleased to report that once again we've delivered on all of these metrics this year. Volume growth has been comfortably ahead of our GDP plus one target, which we calculate to be 2.3%. Our volume is also well ahead of the corrugated market, which recorded growth of about 1.5%. Return on sales increased by 130 basis points to 8.8%, near the top of our target range. Miles will talk later about why we're now raising this target. ROACE improved 160 basis points, reflecting the benefit of increased profitability and also tight management of our capital. As a reminder, this is calculated on average capital employed at the end of every month, which, to be clear, means it's not an end-of-year measure. Cash conversion has come in at 127% due to our strong cash flow, which has benefited from the improved working capital inflow. As you may remember, when I was asked this time last year if there's still room to improve on working capital, and explained that whilst our ratios were sector-leading, there was still some way to go before they became an all-company best or towards all-company best in class. We worked hard last year on further improvement initiatives, and we keep the same level of focus going forward. We've consistently delivered at above 120% cash conversion, and by now setting the target at 100%, we've recognised the need for sustainability going forward. The result of this cash flow benefit is seen in net debt, down to £651 million, resulting in a gearing of just below 1.5 times, in conformity with our target of being at or under 2 times leverage. As a reminder, the Durapac acquisition and now the Lantero announcement we made today closed or will be closing after the year end, and will obviously have a small impact on next year's year-end leverage. Since the year end, we've also had the benefit of the proceeds of the SEPAC disposal. Here are our financial headlines. Revenue is up 1% and operating profit up 17%. I'll take you through bridges of these key items in a moment. The result of this rise in operating profit is the improvement in margin by another 130 basis points. Earnings per share is up 24%, which reflects the benefit of deleveraging and refinancing. Dividend per share is up 14% in line with the reported EPS growth, and which is where you can see the impact of FX translation on our results. Return on average employed is also up, as I described previously. Let's now go through the impact on revenue, as there's some large moving parts here. The largest single effect is that of currency translation, which has taken £236 million of our reported revenue. The euro, of course, has had a huge effect given the countries we do business in and the way it's devalued over the last 12 months. As a reminder, substantially all of our exposure to foreign exchange is translational, and we have a very limited, if any, transaction exposure in any of our countries. This FX effect is based on the average rate for the year, recognising that the euro has weakened progressively through the year, albeit at a faster rate in the second half. While you will all have your own view on the direction of exchange rates, it's worth noting that if rates remain at current levels this year, there will be another broadly similar impact in next year's reported figures from foreign exchange as the full averaging effect flows through. The small effect from M&A is a net impact, as in the year we disposed of a foams business in Scandinavia and also our Nantes paper mill, and at the same time acquired K-Plast in plastics, Itamalcheri in recycling, and Andopac, our first corrugated venture in Spain. From there you'll see that on an underlying basis, revenues grew by 1%. Our 3.1% corrugated box volume delivered an uplift of £78 million, while sales price and mix reduced by £32 million, reflecting the pass-through on paper prices, which were marginally down year on year. The other you'll see here is largely the impact of increased integration between our UK businesses. Moving now. Moving now to the operating profit bridge. Our growth has been driven by volumes and by synergies. FX is a big headwind, as I've already discussed, and M&A has already been covered. Input costs have been favourable by £30 million. This is a benefit that is additional to the translation benefit on costs incurred in currencies other than sterling, as those translation benefits will be in the FX bar. In line with our business model, these costs have been reflected through in price, so the net effect is relatively small. The drivers of our profit growth, therefore, have been volumes and synergies. We've had a similar amount of drop-through on additional volume as in previous reporting periods. And finally, I'm pleased to report delivery of the final tranche of the FCA packaging synergies. This completes the three-year programme as planned. Margins have improved across the group as a whole by 130 basis points. The largest single improvement has been in the UK, and that was largely a half-one effect from the hidden synergy resulting from our FCA paper expertise being brought to bear on our Kemsley paper mill. This now means that all of our strategically located major mills operate to a similar high level of efficiency, notwithstanding there are still a few small mills in this state which do not perform at the same level, and we continue to review these. Looking across the business more generally, all have seen the benefit of operational gearing and of synergy delivery. It's no coincidence that the region with the highest volume growth, Central Europe and Italy, shows the highest margin growth. This gives us great confidence in the potential future impact of our Europac acquisition. Cash flow has been strong. Looking at this year compared to the prior year for a moment, there's been a significant benefit from working capital, and as you can see that in the revenue to working capital ratio of 2.7% shown at the foot of the page. This has been achieved by tight management of debtors, as well as the usual disciplined approach to inventory and creditors. As you run down the page, tax and interest reduced materially. Interest has benefited, as I previously mentioned, from deleveraging and refinancing, whilst tax paid benefited from a one-off rebate received in half one, and greater focus on the profile of our payments on accounts. The strong cash flow has helped us reduce our leverage to just below 1.5 times. Taking our starting point last year, we have the substantial benefit of free cash flow. Cash exceptional costs broadly track the income statement charge, being the cost of a number of restructuring projects. The acquisition and disposal expenditure cost is the net of the acquisition of Andopac, Itamalcheri and K-Plast, and the disposal of foams, including any debt acquired. As I mentioned earlier, the Duropac acquisition, Stepac disposal, and of course the Lanterra acquisition all happened after the year end and will take leverage closer to 2 times, well, it will be under 2 times still by next year end. Dividend is an important component of our returns to shareholders. We paid £94 million out for dividends in the year, and it will be over £100 million next year. We seek to match our income with our obligations, as you'd expect, with approximately 70% of our debt denominated in euros. The cash flow is one place where we've seen a benefit to our financial statements due to the weak euro, and that's the majority of that £52 million benefit in the FX line. The result is net debt of 1.49 times EBITDA, below our medium target of 2 times, giving us headroom to grow the business. Here's the usual guidance slide. I'll not take you through each of the line items. As you can read the figures. The main point is this guidance includes Duropac, which joined the group on the 1st of June, and makes an assumption for Lantera, which should come in at some point in the next quarter. We talk about our business model being sustainable. While sustainable can mean a range of things, for me, it's about being able to deliver on our commitments to shareholders year in and year out. Miles will be talking more about the robustness of our business model in a minute, but to be clear, this to me is what gives me confidence that we can continue to deliver despite the challenges of the markets we operate in. The main measure of shareholders' returns over the last 5 years is set out on the slide, and the growth rate delivered during Miles' time as Chief Executive describes the efforts made by all of his team. On that note, I'd like to hand back to Miles, who's going to talk a little bit more about how we're implementing our strategy to become an even higher quality business.
Now, thank you, Adrian, for taking us through the strong set of results. But just want to stand back a little bit and talk about what's happened last year, then increasingly come on to how we see the future and the real opportunities that holds for us. So you've heard us talk over many years about the sustainable model. It's very clear we have four stakeholders. If we're going to deliver consistently to our shareholders, we have to deliver for all of our stakeholders. So starting with our customers, talk more about this later, but our objective of becoming their partner of choice, which we undoubtedly are becoming, allowing us to gain market share through the growth of the services and the support that we give them. So I said we've gained share in every region, and we're seeing the volumes on an accelerating trend. The rollout of our impact and innovation centres across Europe to support the solving of our customers' problems as they're facing an increasingly challenging retail environment is getting tremendous traction. And with our employees, keep on adding thousands of people to the company, and we're asking all of them to absolutely give it their best effort, to not give up when it's difficult, to set a high aspirational targets and work with your colleagues towards that, so we're extremely clear of how the company should operate, how we should behave with each other, particularly as we expand our geographic footprint. So you may be a different nationality to one of your colleagues. You could come from East Europe to West Europe. But inside the company, how we operate with each other, how we talk to each other, how we respect each other, the values in the company are core parts of making us an effective organisation that is stronger than the sum of the parts. And we monitor this in many ways. One is the employee engagement. We've seen further improvements there. A statistic that we publish externally is about health and safety. It's about respect for yourself, respect for your colleagues, respect for the product and the service. And again, we've seen a very dramatic reduction in our health and safety statistics. We're now well into the top 15% of European companies in terms of accidents, but our momentum is absolutely tremendous. And as a sign of that engagement, we launched a Save As You Earn scheme for shares for employees, where every month you can buy shares in DS Smith. You have to put the money in yourself. And this is open to all employees. 53% of the employees in the UK took up the offer of every month to buy DS Smith shares. 53% of our entire workforce. I think by any measure, that's a sign of the confidence that our employees have in themselves. And then with the sustainability, we have set a very clear target of reducing CO2, greenhouse emissions, landfill, and water usage. And again, in this year, our reporting shows a very clear further improvement in our performance. So we believe that getting it right for all of these stakeholders will drive that shareholder return that Adrian's run you through, but allow us to have the confidence to increase our target, 34% EPS CAGR over the last 4 years. But let's just reflect slightly on the market in which we're operating, because this is where the opportunity comes from. And a lot has changed in the market, and it continues to change. The economic challenges that our customers face are increasing. Technology is moving all the time. The ability of shoppers to choose which product they're going to buy from which channel, and then how our customers respond to that. Changing demographics and urbanisation across Europe is driving different retail formats, and again requiring our customers to respond instantly to changes in the high street. Now I show here a graph, it's of the UK and the market shares of various retail outlets. But just take that as a proxy for Europe. And we see here back in 2013, 65% of shoppers chose the quite traditional formats of a supermarket and superstores, whereas against a generally flat market, that's set to decline by 53%, 65 to 53, down 12, which is what, a fifth. That's a 20% change in your retail format that you're selling your product through, and it's changing every day. So this change is our opportunity. It's really not about tons of paper. It's about partnering with our customers so we can respond instantly to the requirements put on them. You can't have a product that's lasting for 3, 4, 5 years because it's going to change as the consumer's changing. So it's about a relationship with the customer. And that's what we've been focusing on, how we help our customers grow their sales at the point of sale, how we reduce their total supply chain cost and reduce risk so they can deploy with confidence across a wide geographic footprint. And for that, they are choosing to consolidate their supply chain because you can't partner with everybody. You can only have one partner. You can only work closely and intimately with one supplier. So as the consumer's changing the shopping habits, it is driving this consolidation of the supply chain. But you've got to have a mentality of working with them, and that's exactly what we're doing. And we don't think it's going to stop. We think it's going to become more challenging, which is our opportunity. So how do we satisfy that demand? How do we satisfy that requirement for a partnering long-term approach? There are three elements to it. One is about the design and the service and the relationship. The other is about our acquisition and our scale. And the last is how we start to service them across an even wider geographic footprint. So I'll spend the next few slides just talking about the whole area of the relationship with our customers. And this is showing the cycle we go through with our customers. Now, obviously, manufacturing is the absolute core of how we think. That's where we come from. How do you manufacture? It's in our DNA. how you drive continuous improvement. Aidan's taking you through an example of the UK and how it improved margins. That's about continuous improvement by learning from each other. And we've learned a lot from the FCA acquisition, and we continue to learn more from each other. So how to manufacture at scale, having the facilities that allow for the efficiencies to be generated across Europe and deploy uniformly across Europe. But in addition, what's increasingly important is the insight into the shopper. And this is an area which we've been doing a lot of work on. Understanding the consumer trends to help our customers anticipate how people are going to shop in the future. Get the packaging right. What's going to happen in a year's time, 2 years' time, 3 years' time? Helping them with this. And many of our partnering arrangements are now far more about the long-term consumer trends. And then how we convert that insight into the innovation of this is the solution for the customer. And that's our 45 design and impact centres which we have built and continue to build across Europe to translate the insight into a solution. And then it's into design. How do we design a product that's going to work for them? And that's where our performance packaging comes in. That's where our opt-in solutions comes in. So we can ensure with our customers that they can trust us to have the long-term insight, the innovation to separate them from their competitors, the ability to design efficiently and then deploy at scale. And here is one example. You may have seen it in the reception room. Ritter Sport, some of you may know it, some of you may not, but it's a very, very important brand, particularly in Central Europe around Germany. How do we help that customer grow sales, reduce cost, and manage their risk? So if you look at the product, growing sales, they have to change from selling confectionery next to the till, where you're queuing, you see the product, to working in a discount format, where they don't have that. They don't have the confectionery next to the tills. So how are they going to attract the consumer, the shopper, to their product when they've lost one of their main points of sale? So therefore, they need a display. They need to create their whole display. They need to have a display that pushes the product to the front because you can't have the hanging, you can't have the pegs and hanging the product anymore because it's too expensive to pack it in the store. So it's got to display very well, so it has to push the product to the front. They need to be able to deploy that in whatever the retail format, discount, convenience, supermarkets, superstores. So this is a modular design. And whether it's spring, summer, autumn or winter, people buy chocolate differently. So depending on the weather, you buy it differently, you want a different colour. So our expertise around digital printing, where we lead the world in this, to give them the product that they want anywhere in Europe with scale that's suitable for the retail outlet. And how is this translated into our sales? This is the proof that they put in. We started off with the acquisition of SCA. If you remember, SCA had been losing about 3% volume for each year for the previous few years. But in the first period of volume acquisition, we suddenly moved the SCA business into growth, and we grew by 0.6% 2 years ago. Last year, we grew our volumes by 2.2%, 1% ahead of the market. And this year, we've grown by 3.1%. 1.6% ahead of the market, nearly double the average for the industry. Of course, it was a 2.3 in the first half. So in the second half, your maths is very good. You can see that we are getting well towards the the 4% on average, and that momentum has absolutely continued. So the second point is around our acquisition strategy, about how to support our company. And this is where we were in 2010. It's perhaps a little bit generous because we've coloured in the whole of France, but we've just had two plants in Italy and two plants in Poland. We had a very, very strong position in the UK. And over the years, you see how we've now built a position with Lantero Carton now into supplying 27 markets across Europe. That's the most complete coverage of any company. This acquisition is a key part of our management competency. How to acquire and how to dispose successfully, generating value for our customers, generating value for our shareholders. But we've taken the opportunity to also build group-wide functions to support and strengthen the continued expansion of the company, because we think there is a lot of opportunity in our core business, our existing business, to drive further returns, better operational practice, better customer service, better product development. And turning to the acquisitions in the last, disposed in the last year, our customers have pulled us to these companies. We like to say we're the consolidator of choice. A lot of these are family-owned companies. Some of them are owned by venture capitalists. So it's showing how we can work with a variety of owners, a variety of cultures. Consolidator of choice driven by our customer demand. So with Durapac, the acquisition completed on the 1st of June, and I have to say the response from all of our new colleagues is absolutely tremendous. Being part of a large organisation, learning and growing with each other, it's been absolutely tremendous. And from our customers, very, very positive. Not only our existing customers in enabling us to supply them the solutions they currently have across a wider geographic footprint, but from the customers of Durapac who haven't had the opportunity to work with a company like DS Smith. And we will back this with the implementation of various innovation centres. And we bought Andopac 6 months ago in Spain, our first toehold from a family company, and we've been absolutely delighted with the customer response since then. It's surpassed our expectations. So with those two, we feel very confident of where we are, very confident. We've also disposed of some businesses at good prices. They're non-core, and it allows us to focus more heavily on our core business. A smaller plastic disposal last year, but we do remain positive on the bag-in-box opportunities that are available to us. And the acquisition of a Lantero Carton, completed very early this morning, very early. It's been a long time in coming. It's a business that we know very well. It is subject to competition clearance, which we hope to get over the coming months. But it enables us to build on a business which has an excellent platform, particularly in the FMCG sector. And we respond to this from requests from our customers to come into the market, the fourth largest market in Europe, to give us the unique solutions that we give them elsewhere. Not only do we think we can grow this business quite strongly organically, but it's also with 10% market share now, it's an excellent platform for further acquisition-led growth. You can see the financial metrics. We'll see update over the in the future, but a post-synergy multiple of between 5 and 6 on cost synergies, built on those platforms of functional expertise that we've developed over the last few years. And then coming on to a little bit more about the future, because Europe is still a highly fragmented market, we believe there is still a lot of opportunity for us in Europe. Further growth in the market share, being seen as a consolidator of choice. But these solutions we're providing our customers, they are pulling us quite hard into some other markets. They want that same approach, that same value-adding partnering approach in other markets where they face the same challenges. I said that UK position on the retail environment is a proxy for elsewhere, and it absolutely is. One of the advantages that we have here is that the UK retail market is it's amongst one of the very best in terms of its progressive nature in the world. So how do we solve this? How do we satisfy our customers? Well, our approach is about partnering with the best. Licensing technology. So our performance packaging has gone down so well in Europe. It's seen as the approach of choice. So they've been asked to license that outside of Europe so they can have the same solution because that's the one that they want. So we're now licensing that again into the US. And that comes on top of the other intellectual property that we license there around our packaging solutions. All backed by a strong, specific customer demand. But to complement that, we've also acquired a consultancy business, a modest consultancy, but it gives us now positions not only in Europe, but also the US and Asia, on which to service our customers in terms of the solutions. So we'll build further on that. And again, the response has been absolutely tremendous. So this is our return on sales over the years. For many of you, you've been with us for a while. We started a while ago about 4.7% ROS. We got up to 7.2, but then we bought in SCA that had a margin of 5.6. We doubled the size of the group, and that came in at 5.6%. We've driven the margin, but not at the expense of asset turnover. It's easy to drive margins by hammering the balance sheet, but you see, the asset turnover is a key part of how we work, driving out working capital, keeping the asset utilization improving. So it's margin, value-added growth, not bought from the balance sheet. And as I said, our medium-term target now, it was 7-9. We've had to raise that by 100 basis points. So in summary, I think everybody in DS Smith is pleased with the work that they've done. It's a strong set of results. We're building a sustainable performance. But the momentum's continued. We're off to a good start for the year, and we remain very excited about the opportunities that reshaping our portfolio offers us. Thank you very much. So Adrian and myself are here to answer any questions people may have. Yes, please.
Hi, Hi, Justin Jordan at Jefferies. Can you just give us a quick sort of a geographical spin around the various operating review? I'm just particularly want to focus on Italy and where you've seen very strong volume growth. I'm just curious, can you give us a bit more color as to how you've delivered that much faster than market growth in that region? And equally, I suppose, just, you know, more challenging markets like the UK and France or Western Europe, you know, how you're performing in those markets.
If we go back 2010, UK, a bit in France, and a little bit in Italy and in Poland. But the main position was the UK. We brought in SCA, and what we're seeing with the growth, we had quite a mature position in the UK, easily the market leader, good returns. But clearly, when you're so far ahead in the market, it's difficult to significantly change market share. So the growth has actually come from the new regions that we've gone into with SCA. It's turning around their performance by using our products and our approach. And Italy is one of the best examples. The Italian market, it's about the solutions that we have. It's really as simple as that. It's around our approach to the customer and partnering, the relationships we've built, the impact innovation centres, the Optim solutions are now coming on with performance packaging. It's so value-adding in a market that's quite challenging that we've been absolutely delighted with the response. But it really is around the service and the customer response, and it's no different in Eastern Europe, is it? I mean, the growth there has been absolutely tremendous. Yeah. So it's really just, you can really see it in its fullness in these markets that we've taken over. And I've no doubt you'll see that in Spain as well. No doubt.
Just one follow-up thing. Sorry, borrowing your own phrase as the consolidator of choice.
Yeah.
You're becoming more and more short paper because obviously what you're buying is box plants.
Mm.
And some of them, trying to get on a pro forma basis post this morning's M&A, you're probably about 60% or something?
Yeah, we're slightly below that.
Slightly below that.
Slightly
okay.
Below. And we said we wanted to get towards the 50%. And this is really an issue about the flexibility to supply our customers with the products and the solution that is right for them. I'm not trying to fill paper mills and sell them something they don't particularly want. This is about having the flexibility to supply them. Now, because we're so large, we need some paper. So I don't think we'll be going below the 50%. And clearly, our papers tend to be concentrated really around sort of the spine of Europe and less in the outlying regions. And obviously we have to continue solving for that. But we're getting towards our 50% target.
Yeah. Well, just one final thing. I know you don't really talk about price, but obviously I know from recently you've announced, whatever, 50 years on Tesla.
Yeah.
What gives you confidence that, having tried this earlier in the year and been unsuccessful, that it will be successful now?
The demand, I mean, this is just about us. We have certain paper capacity. Our box plants are very busy. And if other people want the paper, frankly, they need to pay more because we need it. So on that basis, we're very busy. If other people are busy, then we'll see that price go through. But it's a response to where we are. So it's like an opportunity cost. At the moment, I think we feel pretty strongly that it's going to go through. But, it's in 6 months' time we'll see where we are. But it does seem to be quite a strong, it does seem to be going through. Yes, it's Alex.
Thanks. It's Alex Meese here from JVM Cas. Three questions for me, please. The first one, just with regard to working capital, Adrian, that looks like an outstanding number. Is there any timing in this, or can we expect you to hold on to that working capital improvement into next year? Secondly, with regard to Lanterra, is there anything you can share on the recent performance of the business in terms of its growth and margins? And thirdly, one for Miles, perhaps. At what point do you think the group will be ready to make some material acquisitions outside of Europe?
Turn one and turn three. Yeah, on working capital, Alex,
as I said last year, there are a lot of initiatives that were kicked off. We now focus on it every month in our management reviews of every part of the business. We actually quite a detailed evaluation of where they were last month, where they are this month, actions that are being taken. We look at overdues. The focus is around, I mean, the main areas of focus around receivables and then inventory. I believe what we've got we'll hold on to. It will require work to hold on to, but I think the way we're structured and the way we're driven and the way our processes work and our procedures operate, we'll hold on to that. I think there's an opportunity still to look even closer at inventory. We're never happy. We're never satisfied. It's a big challenge to the business. What can we do? How can we do it better? Because the instinct is always to revert to old ways where, you know, you have a lot of stock and you're always safe. But we're a pan-European business. We're thinking about that. We're looking at the footprint and how inventory operates across that. So we could see some opportunity as well. But in terms of holding on, definitely. We've then got Durapac, and subject to the clearance, Lantero coming in, and we'll work with both of those businesses to adopt our way of thinking. But it is all about the detail.
Yeah, outside Europe, it's a question we ask ourselves. We have a strong customer pool. We're really exploring that and understanding where it's going to take us. We're solving it in a particular way, which you think is right. Who knows what the future brings? I think the customers have been surprised as well, because people have talked about packaging as just a commodity business. It's a local business, isn't it? Because we're not in it. It's just a local business. It's just a box. But of course it isn't. It's about solution to sell more, reduce total cost at lower risk. And when they see that and the effect that it has on their European operation, I think they've been surprised that when they translate that into other markets, the improvements that could be possible. So excited, but I think we really do have to see just how well it goes, competitor response, etc. So we'll keep a very, very watching brief on this.
Lantero Trading?
Yeah, Lantero Trading. As I say, we know the business very well. We've been able to have an exclusive, good look at it. The trading is absolutely where we expected it to be. I think it's fair to say after a number of years of, you know, really quite difficult economic backdrop, the last quarter generally we've seen a very slight sort of modest tick up in underlying activity, probably related to the QE. I don't know where it's going to go. We've been in a very difficult position in Europe for many years, so we're certainly not calling it's on its way up. I still think there are a lot of other issues to solve, but certainly the current trading has shown a modest tick up. Absolutely where expected to be. No surprises. Yes.
Hector. Morning. Hector Forsyth from Stifel. A couple of financial questions first. Can you run through how the CapEx guidance works? CapEx running ahead of depreciation. So can you break the CapEx into what you're spending it on and also break out the maintenance element from the growth element, if that's possible? And then on exceptionals, you ran slightly ahead of the guidance on exceptionals last year. Can you rattle through where that came from? And you've got another batch of 40 million of exceptionals penciled in for this year. Again, can you let us know a little bit more detail about that? And also, importantly on that, is that a recurrent number? So is it going to be in future periods, or are we getting to the bottom of the pot?
Okay. In terms of CapEx, Hector, I think we look at it. It's hard to sit here and be overly precise. I mean, we look at it in terms of, you know, around about a third of it is invested in pure type of growth initiatives. Around about a third
in elements that are to do with, you know, routine types of maintenance, and then around about a third of it is other types of maintenance, particularly around the areas of health and safety. And where we, Miles described earlier, the focus that we have on making sure that all of our factories are operating in the most effective way from an accident perspective, from a health and safety perspective. It's a key part of what we think adds to our business and to some extent differentiates ourselves from it. So when we make acquisitions, you know, quite often there is a capital to be spent bringing them to the standards that we've got. And then there's also expenditure maintaining our existing estate at that standard. So if you think about it in those three broad slugs, you're probably reasonably close to how we split it out. But we can pick it up offline specifically if you've got anything that you really want on CapEx. In terms of exceptionals, roughly, we guided about 30 last year end. We're at for restructuring and reorg, we're at about 40, but then we had the Nantes disposal into that, which had an impact, which we described. The restructuring was predominantly the UK and Germany. There's a lot has gone on asset footprint. We also talked about the previous year, the reworking of the plastics footprint in Europe. We've also had a level of exceptional this year through, which has appeared through our Ukrainian business. So there's about 7, I think, that's come through on that, and that just simply is a mechanics of how we account for that business and the hyper devaluation. I can't even think of the right word to describe it, but the massive devaluation in the Ukrainian currency. And then there's a small amount that I think we described at the half year on a write-off of fees associated with the SCA financing. In terms of going forward, you've seen the guidance. You know, we don't have a crystal ball to sit here and say, what is it into perpetuity? However, it's very, very clear we're an acquisitive business. We're growing our footprint, we're rationalising, and we're managing in the most efficient way we can do. And that inevitably, when you go through a series of acquisitions, there is an element required to organise the business in the most effective way. And you see it. You see through the history of our results the impact of getting to grips with the asset footprint. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Has Martin got anything?
That's you're right, Adrian. We stop acquiring, then the restructure's not needed, so the exceptionals don't. It's as simple as that. And the other element, I think most of it's non-cash. It's just non-cash. We believe now, for us, it's not a non-cash issue. Just accounting changes. And CapEx absolutely will fall into line with depreciation when we look slightly further out. And again, it's partly a response to the acquisitions. I say all of these costs are built into the returns we expect to make from acquisitions. So if we have to spend more capital, then that goes into the capital base, and that's what we monitor against. But it's a really response to developing the business, basically.
Okay, thanks on those ones. Two extra questions then. On energy costs, good gains last year and on the energy cost side. Can you give us some guidance year over year into this year where you think you're going to be for energy costs?
Yeah, if you look at energy year on year last year, so the reported year to the previous year, there's a gain of there was somewhere between 40 and 50 million, going up on 45. About a quarter of that came from FX, just simply because it was a translational benefit. About a quarter of it came from price, because we've had a lower energy cost. Natural gas has come down in the year. About a quarter of it came from investments that we've made in CHP, in our combined heat and power operation. So we've invested in that. That's part of our capital base that's delivered the benefits through the energy line. and about a quarter of it to do with, again, a continued focus on efficiency. We have a group of people, small group, based on the continent, and their sole role is driving our energy costs down through best practice, through managing our utilization and our operations. So we've had those benefits. I think they're probably well described there. In terms of for this year, again, we don't have a huge crystal ball on it. Clearly, prices haven't risen back again. So the pricing benefit that we received, we would expect to hold. We have a hedging program, as we did last year. So last year, we didn't benefit from the absolute flaws in the price because we were hedged through the year, and it will be the same again this year. I'd still expect to see a level of incremental benefits going through energy efficiency projects. CHP benefits, you know, were largely, they'll be held because that's the return on that capital invested. So last year's level to this year, there might be a little bit on price still to come in, and there might be a little bit on energy efficiency still to come in. But, you know, I probably can't be more precise than that.
Okay, Adrian, thank you. And then the final question, in terms of the superb performance in terms of volumes, how does that break down between new customers and doing more for your existing customers?
We supply all of the major customers. So by implication, all of the growth comes from the existing portfolio, customer portfolio. The challenge, but are we replacing a product that's already there? Not in all situations. So you can have one customer, but it's not just cannibalizing what's there and going head to head with others. It's about a different solution. So if you look at it from the point of view of, does it come from a new product? And I mean a genuine new product, not just a, you know, just a small change. Then we have quite a high proportion. So if we look at that Ritter Sport, the chocolate, it wasn't in that format before. It's an existing customer. We did a lot of work for them, just straight shelf ready, but now they need a totally different solution. Existing customer, but it's expanding the perimeter of corrugated. That's where the value is. So you're not just trying to, you know, compete against somebody else head to head on a product just on price. It's about a new solution. And if we look at that for the different retail formats, it's very strong. You saw that product actually on the dolly, so you can wheel it in and out. That's been a very strong development. If you look at taking share from other formats such as plastic, that's quite a strong performance as well. But in terms of actual new customers last year, we were really hoping, we were really working with our existing. Obviously going forward, in the local market in Southeast Europe and Spain, then clearly we've got an opportunity. And that's what's driven a lot of the growth coming out of SCA, supplying our solutions and our approach into these new markets. They've never had it before. They've never had anybody coming along and saying, this is how we can work with you. Hence, you've had that growth. It's so that's how I expect it to see going forward. Product development for that new the new customers in those regions. It's quite interesting. That sort of sales plan. It's an interesting piece of work. Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, I'm just conscious of everybody's time. We've been for an hour. Is there another question, anybody? One more.
James Armstrong, Vertical Research. Just a quick one. You said you were seeing organic volumes accelerate in the back half of last year. Is that continuing into this year? And are there any regions that are showing particular growth or slowdown?
You work out the maths, and I think in the second half it gets about 4%. The 1 month to another month, it's, you know, things can change because of the weather and all the rest of it. When you look over a quarter or 6 months, there's no doubt the second half was stronger than the first half. I've said there is a little bit, has some of the economies with the QE, has there been a particular effect? So we saw momentum during the year. Where it goes in the future, though, we still do remain cautious on. Europe still has to resolve a number of issues, which you read about every day in the press. So we still remain quite cautious on the market, but, you know, we obviously recognise that on the back of a number of things, we have a very strong second half. Great. Well, look, again, I'm conscious of everybody's time. We're always very appreciative of the time that you spend with us. So with that, I'd just like to summarise that we're pleased with a strong set of results. We've raised the margin target on the back of the momentum. We've reshaped and will continue to reshape the business portfolio. And we've got off to a decent start in this year. So thank you very much, everybody, for your time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Be for me. I can bloody have a load of those. I'll be hyper fit.
Thank you.